Yeah, no one's like going to the head writer's house of Blindspot and being like, what's the next episode arc going to be? I need to know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 241, and I'm your host, Matt.
And I'm Scott.
And I'm Ash.
And it feels like it's been forever.
It has been, man. It's been over, I think, over a month since we did this.
A while back.
I think. Has it been, really? Because we did, when was Comic-Con?
July.
July 19th,
and it's now, and we did one, it's almost been a month.
Yeah,
almost
we did a pre-Comic-Con show, and then you two went out there and did a bunch of stuff and we put that up.
Yeah. Thanks, man. That was, you got to edit all sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah, no, it was all good stuff and I'm happy with the way it all turned out. So that's cool.
Yeah.
So I realized we talked during the recap episodes, like we were going to post them nightly and then did not.
Yeah. No, that always happens. I'm sure people figured out what's going on.
Yeah.
So on this week's show, we're going to talk about, of course, what we've been playing, reading, seeing, looking at, and then there's some news we can get caught up on, and then we're going to talk about Layers of Fear, a new game for Xbox, Suicide Squad, and Don't Think Twice, the film.
Cool.
Two films and a game.
Yeah. And all sorts of other shit. There's lots of
shit. Yeah. We always get into other shenanigans, but that's kind of the... That's the outline, at least, for today.
That's what we've scoped for
this
project.
Correct. Yeah.
Awesome.
All right. Well, this episode's brought to you by Loot Crate. The theme this month is anti-hero. Go mad with glee by getting yourself a special Harley Quinn item and Suicide Squad comic book download this month, as well as items from World of Warcraft, Archer, Kill Bill, and Hellboy. Those are some good anti-heroes. I didn't even think about Kill Bill as a... Yeah. This month's crate also comes with a full copy of World of Warcraft.
What?
With all current expansions and 30 days of free game time. Wow.
Oh, okay.
Okay. That's a lot of War to craft. Ash, did you write that?
I wrote that, yeah.
That's a good line. So head on over to lootcrate.com. I knew it wasn't them, but it still was a decent line.
They get paid for that, yeah.
Yeah, that's free. That was free.
They should pay you to write the copy.
Yeah,
there we go. Yeah.
They owe you like 25 cents, I think. Yeah. Lootcrate.com/ratedNA is the link to go to and use the code ratedNA. That's RATEDNA. And you'll get a discount. I think it's 10% off. And you'll help out the podcast in the same breath. So
yes.
Do that for us because we appreciate it very much. Mm-hmm. And we like that you guys can get some nerd stuff in the mail.
Awesome.
So I realize I sound sick. I have like a smoky voice right now.
Yeah, a little bit.
That's weird. I don't know what that is. I think we'll talk about it later. Scott.
Oh, hey.
What you been up to?
Let's see. I haven't been doing a whole lot. I feel like I've been maybe finishing the games that I was playing before you guys went to Comic-Con.
Sure. Yeah.
I forgot what I was playing at the time. Oh, I was reviewing a game called Dex and I finished that. And then I finished the former Games with Gold game, Child of Light, which is that Ubisoft.
Oh, did you finish
it? Yeah, it's built on the art framework, you know, that they use for Rayman and Valiant Hearts. Yeah. So that was fun. That was a good game. It was like kind of like RPG light. It was kind of fun to play through that and good art and stuff like that. I finally dusted off the Wii U and I played Captain Toad Treasure Tracker.
Really? Because I was like, what is Captain Toad Treasure Tracker?
Yeah. This was the game that they had at PAX a while back, and I just thought it was really awesome. It's for those that don't know, it's a it's gonna sound stupid. I'm gonna call it a puzzle platformer.
Oh,
it's not a platformer because Toad doesn't jump. So really what it is that it's a bunch of self-contained levels that are sort of displayed within a diorama, which is really neat. So they're all kind of on this 3D plane that you can kind of move the camera around. And then you just kind of move Toad around through these 3D environments, trying to figure out how to get from point A to point B and solve puzzles and move keys around and do a bunch of different things. But, you know, it follows kind of like that standard Mario formula, but it's a completely different game. and probably one of the better spin-off games that I've played. It's a couple years old now, but it's really solid for like the five people out there that own a Wii U. I would highly recommend it. And then it turns out that the game was actually like a prequel to whatever Mario game came out after that, which I think was the Super Mario 3D World, which is like a four-player.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was
one really everyone complained about, that it was way too hard.
Really? Are you serious?
Yeah.
I have a suspicion because I played the side-scrolling game for the Wii U, the Mario game.
Yeah.
I think that the game is difficult because you play by yourself. Because if you have someone that has a Wii U gamepad, for example, to play the 2D game, they can go in with the gamepad and drop in platforms on your screen for you to jump on.
Oh, okay.
So if you go through and play the game by yourself, which I did for a while, like it is extremely difficult because you're basically just playing the game at the hardest level without right. the assistance of the platforms. But yeah, I'm playing a game. I don't even know why I'm reviewing this game, but it's called Layers of Fear. And we'll talk about that later. It's a psychological horror game.
Cool.
Surprising for you.
Yeah. Surprising for me. Yeah. But we'll talk about that.
I mean, other than Dead Space, I guess that's pretty heavy, but
yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like in that wheelhouse, but, we'll talk about that later. I'm listening to an audiobook, which is, Star Wars Aftermath: Life Debt, which is
I got a copy of this at Comic-Con.
Really?
It's sitting on my shelf. I haven't started it yet.
Okay. Well, did you read the first book?
No. Nope.
The Star Wars Aftermath.
I've read nothing in the new EU.
Yeah, so. I forgot what that book was called. I don't know if it was just Aftermath.
I think it was just called Aftermath, yeah.
Oh, maybe yeah. Aftermath is the one I got. I got just Aftermath.
The first one? Okay.
Yeah.
It's...
You talked about that one on the podcast, right?
Yeah, I did, and I listened to the audiobook, and the Temin Wexley, Snap Wexley, you know, Greg Grunberg in the film, is a kid in this book because the book takes place after the Battle of Endor. And it's he's very whiny in the first book, and so it's kind of hard to listen to the reader do his lines, you know, because he's just kind of like a brat.
Rough.
And the story, it's weird because these books sort of they're telling a story about sort of this weird cast of characters that find themselves thrown together post Battle of Endor. But what I think it really is that they're just sort of they're almost like painting a background landscape for the whole Star Wars universe at this time, at this point in time.
And what I said to Scott yesterday is that after you finish Aftermath, you know what happens in Episode 8, and you realize that none of the characters are significant enough to really find their way into the movie. So it's like, well, what the hell did I read about these? And I don't know. I wasn't a huge fan of Aftermath. Like Scott said, I think it does paint a pretty good picture of what the universe is like after Endor, which I think is neat. But,
doesn't that sort of go back to something we brought up before, which is like all these books that you're reading now, it's more active. So like, you're not actually like, it's easier to be disappointed, I think, because you're like, oh, what if we'll find out about this? Cause there's still like wonder to be had out of this. Whereas like, when you read the old books, you did it literally just to like stay in that universe and like get that joy out of Star Wars that you knew you weren't going to get anymore.
It extended your story. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So now it's like you're filling in gaps and you're kind of like holding out till the next thing. And then you're like, oh, this guy's interesting. I wonder if they'll do something with him. And then when they don't, it's like easy to kind of be disappointed, but which I understand 100%. I'm not like knocking it, but it's one of those like, I think it's just because of the world we live in where like Star Wars is back now. And it's like, oh, this isn't just me enjoying a thing because I otherwise wouldn't have any Star Wars to enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, the tricky thing is that with this particular book series, there aren't a lot of characters from like the films or TV shows in them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though they, you know, make appearances and are sort of mentioned by name and things like that. But it is hard to read the book and then feel like, you know, at times you're like, this could be anything. This doesn't have to be Star Wars. You could tell the story anywhere. If you're not really moving the needle in the Star Wars canon.
Right. Yeah. Sure.
And so, what I will say about this second book though, is that it actually makes the first book a little better because it starts to kind of flesh out some of the relationships between this ensemble cast and even focuses on other characters that had minor roles in the first book, which in my opinion are a little bit more interesting than some of the main characters. That being said, you know, like if you are looking for a book series about a weird ensemble cast of characters that go on adventures together, I would rather you just read The Palace Job trilogy by Patrick Weeks, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's the problem is that there are other things out there that will scratch this itch, unless you're looking for specifically a Star Wars book and you're just really hungry for that. Right.
Yeah.
And the last thing I'll add is that I also saw that they are releasing a Rogue One companion novel. Did you guys see that?
No,
I did not. No, yeah,
I found it in Audible. So it's, I guess, is coming out, you know, obviously prior to the film, but I don't think it is a novelization of the film. I think it's a companion story. So it'll be interesting to see if that's, you know, any better than this, what this trilogy is shaping up to be so far.
Cool.
Yeah. And obviously I'm watching the Olympics. You guys watching any of that?
Yeah, man, yeah. I actually am.
Yeah. It's cool. It's weird how NBC crafts the narratives for, you know, the Olympic primetime coverage, because it's just like so heavy handed towards the Americans and, you know, specifically, you know, certain sports like gymnastics and swimming and track and field. Like if you were just watching prime time, you would think that there were no other sports other than what takes place in the pool.
They tend to
focus
on the ones that we win a lot just because it makes for good TV. But I'm using, not to hijack, but I'm using that app.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about the ABC app is they just have like 20 feeds going all the time, and you can hop on over to like judo and there's no commentary or anything. They just have like
the raw feed.
Yeah. They just have like the raw feed, but they're edited feed. So there's someone in a control room going, you know, controlling stuff, but there's no announcer. So you just kind of hear, you know, sort of the ambient noise of what's going on.
That's nice.
And you get to kind of watch the score and everything. And I thought that was pretty fascinating because I've never really watched the Olympics that way before. Mm-hmm. So I really recommend that. And like you said, if you don't want to watch the main ABC or NBC coverage, it's a really solid way to check it out.
That's cool. And then, I don't know if you guys follow, Leslie Jones, that, you know, the actress from Ghostbusters and SNL, who's like going completely bonkers for the Olympics.
Right.
Her Twitter feed is so it's kind of like surreal because she was tweeting about the Olympics and posting vines about everything. And then the producer for NBC's Olympic coverage is just like, "Hey, why don't you come down here?" And she's like, "Are you serious?" And they're like, "Yeah." And so now today she's down there.
That's amazing.
Does she have like an in at NBC though, or
I think just she works there. You know what I mean? Like that's pretty much it.
Throw it on your corporate card. It's great.
Yeah, I feel like she just took advantage of a good situation. She basically found herself some summer work by you know, not being lazy, right? By anyways, so Ash, what's going on?
Watching Olympics, like we just said,
pretty
fun so far. I made a really conscious effort to actually do it this time around. I haven't watched it in probably honestly a good 8 years. So it was good to actually sit down and watch some, and you know, it can be a little bit dry, especially if they're not sports that we follow all the time, you know, not like we're going to like really seek out gymnastics on like a Wednesday night when it's not the Olympics, but
holy shit, that women's gymnastics US team are a bunch of gymnastics robots. They're amazing.
They're like the best in the world right now.
They said that like the worst person on our team would easily be the best athlete in any other country on their team. You know what I mean?
They're unbelievable. They're incredible right now.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So watching that, watch Stranger Things, which I can't speak highly enough about, and absolutely in love with it. I think Matt, we should do a special full episode of Stranger Things.
Yeah,
we need to do what we need to talk.
I'm going to rewatch it, I think, before we do that. I'm off tomorrow, so I might rewatch it in the morning.
I kind of had it on in the background during like nightly child feedings, and I'm already back through it again on episode 5. And it's just as good a second time. So Stranger Things is incredible. I went to GeekyCon the weekend after Comic-Con, and it was really cool. I'm just going to talk about it for a minute, and then I guess we'll talk about it later. We actually have some awesome audio that I got from former guest Mary-Kate Wiles. And GeekyCon was awesome. It was a smaller convention in Orlando that was spawned out of LeakyCon, which is a Harry Potter convention. And GeekyCon actually happened this year on the weekend of the new Harry Potter book release. So there were a lot of like huge like Harry Potter things going on there, and people really freaking out. And a lot of really, since it was a smaller con, I want to say, you know, a few thousand, 3,000-4,000 maybe.
It's more like a fan. It's mostly a fan convention, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But the good thing about that is the panels were very intimate. Like I saw a panel on like self-esteem and body shape that they'd been doing for like 5 years there. And it was just super emotional, like people getting up and telling really great stories and the panelists, you know, really getting intimate with the audience. And just a very positive event overall that I really ended up enjoying, you know. So definitely if you're in the Orlando area or if you want to travel for GeekyCon, they'll probably be doing it next year. And we'll have some, we'll talk about a little bit more with Mary-Kate Wiles and an upcoming episode because we have some good stuff from her.
Excellent.
Other than that, I'm still like mainly playing Overwatch, and I know that sounds ridiculous, but I still love it as much as the first day that I played it, maybe even more. I'm like, it's like one of those things that I'm like, now I'm not just like playing the game, I'm like kind of like, I feel like I'm part of the Overwatch community, if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
I give a shit about like patches. I read like patch notes, and it's weird. It's been a really long time since I've cared that much about a single game. So I'm reading about it. I'm on the Reddit reading stuff about it. I'm like, you know, pretty okay at it. Like I haven't been good at a competitive shooter in a really long time. So I feel like I'm actually okay. I don't ever let it stress me out. I play in the morning, like, you know, for a good half hour, 45 minutes before anybody wakes up.
Nice.
And that's pretty much my gaming for the afternoon. But I love it. I'm kicking butt. And the first competitive season's over in about 2 weeks. And I ranked okay. I'm pretty proud of myself. And then
do you get some sweet loot for
I don't
ranking?
Think I get. Nope. I don't think I get shit. I think like the
not
top,
like a T-shirt, like a skin for your. Nah,
you don't get any. Oh, if you do really, really well, you get like a golden gun. But I'm not even close to that. I get like points that I can use in future seasons to maybe like buy something. But I don't really get anything. The top 500 in the world get special stuff.
Oh,
so the top 500 in the world, but there's over 15 million copies sold of this game. It is just a massive, massive game. So 500 out of 15 million are going to get this, like, I think it's like an animated spray that they can spray on the wall and then it moves. And it's the only animated spray in the whole game. And people are freaking out about it, which is silly, right? It's silly, but there's only 500 people that are going to get it. So it's like a way to like kind of, you know, whip out your E-peen and like people go, holy shit, look at that E-peen.
So you have like a 3/10,000ths of a chance of getting something based on the community. Like
right.
15 million people.
I mean,
people?
People that are good at this game are like good at this game and they're making a living being good at this game.
Like so streaming and things like that.
Right. Yeah. They're streaming and they're now part of pro teams that are, I want to say this weekend at Gamescom, there is one of the first big matches with the pro teams and it's for $100,000.
Wow. That's dope.
So people are, you know, people are doing well and it's a great game. It's just really a lot of fun. And that's mainly what I'm playing. I did go to see Suicide Squad, which we'll review in a little while. And I wanted to give Scott a big plug for putting all that fucking Comic-Con stuff out. So definitely check out our RSS feed on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever the hell you want to check it out. And we have a bunch of extra, I want to say 4 or 5 extra little.
There's five episodes. So far. It's all on the main page right now of Nerd Appropriate as well. So if you're looking for the daily wrap-ups that you guys did and the interviews that you conducted while you were there, you can find them all in the feed. They're like, if you're a subscriber, you already have them. Just go back and look through the episode list or go to nerdappropriate.com. You can stream and download from there as well.
You know, I'm just going to say, I suspect they're looking for the interviews more than the daily wrap-up.
Yeah, you think
Ash
so? You think people don't people care more about what Hannatel's doing than what you guys did at Comic-Con?
It's possible. Oh, okay. Yeah, I think it's possible.
But our wrap-ups are so we're like, well, this morning we ate breakfast.
Well, that's I like to bill those as sort of like the experience for
slice
someone
of life.
For someone that hasn't go. So for you know, for our new listeners, usually when we go to a convention, we do daily wrap-ups of what we did, and we're not breaking like big news or anything, but it's kind of like to give you some insight into what it's like to attend these conventions, because you know, if you don't go, all you see are the tweets and like live streams of panels, but there's like many, many other things that happen in between those moments, and we like to talk about that stuff too.
It's true.
I should also say I'm still casually playing Pokemon Go.
Wow.
I am level 11. Really? I'm level 11 and I am on Team Mystic.
I know one person who is still playing other than you who is still playing.
Well, I only play like when casually. I walk the baby, you know what
I
mean?
Yeah, I just mean that like the drop off that we all kind of thought would happen.
Yeah.
Like I can't say with any authority whatsoever, but in my own little circles, I've noticed that everybody has dropped off, which is interesting.
Yeah.
I agree.
One of those things.
There's not much to it. That's why.
Yeah.
So what can you do? Matt, what are you doing?
Sorry, real quick, right? I don't mean to hijack, but since we were talking about Olympics and Overwatch, you know what I would like to see? I know there's like competitive gaming. I would like to see a competitive gaming sort of like a decathlon, you know? So you're not just good
like
at
you gotta like Mario time match and play Overwatch and Halo and
right
kind of thing.
Right. So
don't
if you're
do
not
that at PAX, isn't that what the Omegathon is?
Yeah, it's like the Omegathon, but it should be there should be a competition for this where it's like
A global the Wizard with Fred Savage where you hitchhike across the country.
Exactly. I want to go to California.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, let's get Jenny Lewis in the car and we'll go.
Right.
But yeah, it would be like, you know, you have to play, you know, speed run of Mario and then you play, I don't know, like Dance Central or Rock Band, and then you have to play a round of Overwatch, and then you play, you know, so you kind of go through a bunch of genres, play like PPL.
So you're not
something.
Just killer at one thing, but
yes.
you can play many things.
Yes. So it kind of demonstrates your overall gaming acumen, you know, just like they do
this
in
just
the regular
the thing you want, weirdly enough.
Well, huh. I think it's we're watching the Olympics right now and the, you know, decathletes have to do multiple sports and gymnastics have to do multiple disciplines, right?
So you want to see less Michael Phelps in the gaming world and more decathletes.
Yeah.
I can't name one, but
yeah. Remember when Pepsi did that thing with the two guys and then it was like a total bust, like in the 80s, it was like Tom and Dan. And you're like, no, I think that's actually a radio show, but you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Anyways.
That's okay.
So Matt.
Yeah.
What have you been doing?
So the other night I got mildly intoxicated and watched Gods of Egypt.
Oh man, that's an odd choice.
I've been really rolling through some just straight up terrible movies lately and I love it. It's like my favorite thing in the world.
Nice.
That movie is an abomination and should not have existed. And like, I'm not even like, I would pull a punch on like Ride Along is at least enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Like you'll laugh. You'll be like, oh, that was a fun, you know, buddy cop kind of movie. And then, like, you know, Batman vs. Superman has its moments of sheer amazingness kind of stuff. You know, like, the actual title fight is fantastic. Gods of Egypt is, like, I just don't even, I, like.
It looks
so
like
do you guys
budget.
Know what movie it is?
It looks like they had a budget for the
film.
Yeah,
I know what movie it is. It's the guy from Game of Thrones.
It's
and
Jamie Lannister is Horace and 300 guy, right? What's his name?
Gerard Butler.
Yes. And they're like Egyptian gods. And it's kind of the story, the origin story of Horus, if you will, the Egyptian god. Everybody in the movie is white, which I guess we'll just move past that thing. I don't know. Like, it is a movie about Egypt and there's one ethnically ambiguous woman in it. And otherwise it's like pretty much a white movie. But
interesting.
So there's that. But beyond that, it's just like, it's really, they made a lot of weird choices. So they did a thing, I guess, like in kind of reverence to Egyptian art. They made the gods like twice the size of humans. But then which you would never get from the trailer at all. And the first time I saw it, I was like, what the hell is happening? Why is Jamie Lannister like twice the size of the person he's walking next? They put them with humans. They're just like walking around and they're just like twice the size for no reason whatsoever. Like, this is a person who can put on gold eagle armor without thinking about it, but yet like can't size down to walk with a they make a lot of weird choices, and it was just a plain not very good movie, but it was enjoyable to watch as a joke, I guess. I too watched Stranger Things. It's wonderful. I guess we'll talk about it later. I tell everybody, I've either been saying this to everybody or I tweeted it or something, but I said that it's not a perfect show, but it is like one of the most enjoyable shows I've seen in a long time.
Right. No, I agree with that.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Like, I think we talked about it in Slack a little, that it's like, if Netflix's algorithms are going to pump out like high quality, decently too well written shows that like hit all the things I want to see, then like, yeah, let keep the algorithm going then, you know, like, why not? Like, they put out House of Cards, which is super enjoyable, and but yet not a perfect show. They put out Stranger Things, which is super enjoyable. Like, they put out Voltron. Like, these have all been wonderful shows so far.
Kimmy
Schmidt. So Kimmy Schmidt, yeah, like hey, something's right in that algorithm is all I'm gonna say. I don't know what, but
I think the difference is that with television, you you, the viewer, are the product and the advertiser is the customer. So ratings matter. But with Netflix, you are the customer, the subscriber. And so they are just data mining and making things that they know you want to see so that you keep subscribing. And in the end, we all win because we get to see things that, you know, based on our habits and our viewing history, like we wanted to watch anyways.
Well, it's something that I don't remember what his name is, but one of the head executives of HBO said a long time ago, which is, we want to become Netflix before HBO or before Netflix becomes HBO. And it's because they live in that world of like HBO is not belonging to commercial success, right? So like when Game of Thrones becomes the biggest show of all time, I still think the numbers are smaller than network shows. It's just that it's a humongous like cultural point. You know, they've made a show that everybody wants to see, whether 30 million people see it or not, doesn't matter, because it's like it's a touch point piece of television, right? Which is like what Netflix is doing as well. So it's like Stranger Things doesn't have to see, like 30 million people don't have to view it. Like Big Bang Theory numbers don't have to be on Stranger Things for it to be a success. It just needs to be talked about. It just needs to be the show that makes people go, oh, I do want a Netflix subscription, you know, to watch Stranger Things on occasion or whatever. So I think they're nailing it. I think it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, no one's like going to the head writer's house of Blindspot and being like, what's the next episode arc going to be? I need to know.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't been gaming at all, I realized. No. Nothing. I have not turned on my Xbox for anything other than media consumption.
Do we need to call somebody?
I don't know what it is. Like I still have to beat Lara Croft. I think it's because we went on vacation. So we didn't just do Comic-Con. We actually went to LA for 4 days before Comic-Con.
Nice.
And yeah, it was nice. We had a really nice time. We haven't been on vacation since last Comic-Con, so it was like kind of one of the only times where we could go like sit at a pool for a day and not feel like bad, you know?
Yeah.
Like we're ignoring someone or something going on. So it was nice. And I think I just kind of fell out of it and haven't jumped back into anything.
Yeah, just doing different things.
Yeah, yeah, a little bit. Mm-hmm. I bought the Humble Bundle. I bought two RPG Humble Bundles recently. One was for Pathfinder.
Okay.
And the other was for Vampire the Masquerade.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, man.
Fantastic.
I currently have, I think I looked at it, I have something like 2 gigs of RPG books in PDF form on my computer.
So good.
Wow.
So good.
I don't know what I'm going to do with them. I feel like I want to play. I had this idea. I was going to throw it at you guys as a general idea, even though you're not here to play with me. But so we're starting up a new D&D campaign with just, it's going to be small. It's me, Melissa, a friend Tate that we met actually through your t-shirt for your old company, Ash. I was wearing that shirt, and Melissa was wearing...
Oh, you can say it. It's okay.
I blanked on it. Sword Coast Legends.
I was wearing a Sword Coast Legends shirt.
And Melissa was wearing a D&D shirt, and we went to our usual breakfast spot where we go like every Sunday, essentially, and get breakfast. And we rolled in, and our friend, or the guy who we knew at that point is Tate, the bartender who served us, because we always sat at the breakfast bar. He was like, hey, and he like kind of walked up and just kind of like looked at us for a minute. And I was like, what's up? And he was like, do you guys play? I was like, what? And he goes, do you play? And he like motioned at my shirt, and I looked down and I looked over at Melissa, and I was like, oh, we're both wearing D&D shirts right now.
Oh, nice.
So I'm starting up a new campaign. I just wrote a world. I was gonna Slack it to you guys so you can hear about it. But starting up a campaign with them, but I had an idea because I have all of these. I've picked up RPGs at PAX when we go. I just have a bunch of them, like random ones. I have Fate and Pathfinder now and Vampire and all these other different ones. And I was thinking, like, wouldn't it be fun, like, once a month to do, like, just, like, kind of put it out among your friends who've ever been sort of interested in playing a game to do, like, a, hey, we're going to just try a session of something random.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Fun, right?
Yeah. You just have to build out some characters for people to just quickly.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you know. Yeah. Like, I'd have to do like a bunch of legwork probably to be like, oh, today we're going to do a 3-hour Shadowrun session. Like, whoever wants to show up, we're just going to play Shadowrun, try it out, see if it's fun or see if it's a total bummer and a pain in the ass, and then like move on with life kind of thing. I feel like it'd be fun.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Maybe we'll give that a shot. And then tomorrow, it's my birthday weekend this weekend. So Sunday's my birthday.
Yes.
And I took tomorrow off. So just, it's 36. I feel like it's not important enough to really talk about.
According to Patton Oswalt, you don't get a birthday.
Yeah, there's like, it's fine. I could take a day off, but that's really about all that matters. But I am, do you guys know what Raspberry Pis are?
Yep.
No.
No? You don't know what these are, Ash?
No.
So there's this group that put together these mini little computers that basically live on like one tiny little PC. Yeah, circuit board. And they have like, they're actually now they're really powerful. They have like ARM processors, which part, like they run cell phones. It has like a gig of RAM. Like it's actually a decent computer now, but I have three of them. I've just kind of picked them up over time. I used to tinker with the old one that I had, and I picked up two new ones that are really cheap. And I've been trying to figure out what to do with them, and I figured it out. I'm doing this tomorrow. This is my day tomorrow. I found an electronics store, like a Skycraft type store here.
Cool.
Thanks.
Called Tinker Games or something, or Tinker or something. And I am picking up an RF transmitter. You guys know what RF is?
Yeah, I do.
Radio frequency transmitter.
Yes, I do.
And I am going to reverse engineer and hack my ceiling fan so that I can control it with Alexa.
Nice.
Oh, cool.
So I want to be able to be like, Alexa, set living room fan to 4, and like it'll turn it up and down and
turn
the light on.
Like a bridge.
Yeah, because it has a remote. It's remote controlled, and I know it's remote controlled over RF. And the Raspberry Pis are, you just write Python, which is like a scripting language, and you can like basically I can shoot the remote at the Raspberry Pi, see what it's transmitting, and then basically just like whenever I talk to Alexa, have the Raspberry Pi transmit that same signal out in the living room, and it should in theory work, but we'll find out.
Cool, that sounds awesome. I hope it works. You'll have to tell us next week on the show how it goes.
That's like fun, right? It's something
I was
fun
really
to do.
Hoping it was food, to be honest. With the Raspberry Pi, I was like hoping you were going to have special birthday treats or something.
No,
no,
I don't know. I think anything's happening.
It's building computers.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's awesome.
Cool.
I started reading The Martian, so there's that. So far, so good. It's a diary. It's like, okay. I don't know that I'm freaking out about it as much as everybody else did, but did you guys ever read it or no?
I listened to it.
You did?
I have not either yet. I have the Audible. I haven't listened to it yet.
The reader is probably the right person to read the book, but you know, the guy is kind of like an asshole, you know? Sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's hard to listen to sometimes.
It's a weird read. Like the pacing's really weird on it. It's not bad by any means. Like it's good, but it's just I'm not in it yet, I guess is what it is. I don't feel like I'm like in the pocket of the book, if you will.
Yeah. It took me a long time to like get into it, like you said. So I would just say stick with it.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I've just barely started. I read it for a couple of days on the train and that's it. And then have you guys ever watched Difficult People on Hulu?
I tried to, and
I
couldn't get into it.
You didn't like it?
Nope. Did not like it.
Oh my God. I'm loving it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I know it's good.
100% hooked.
I know it's good. It's just not for me.
Why? Honestly, like shit on it. I don't care. I it doesn't matter.
I don't really care for the guy. Like I just
Billy,
I kind of
what's his face?
Yeah, I kind of find him annoying. Like I don't the comedy doesn't like land with me, you know what I mean?
It's very Seinfeld in its writing and carrying of the show. I think they're two awful people.
I think that furthers the point.
You don't like Seinfeld?
I've never watched it really.
Well, I mean, that's different than not liking it, but that's, I have never watched.
Well, I mean, I guess I just have a tendency, like, I don't really like the horrible person comedy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's like great when horrible things happen to horrible people. Like that's kind of the point of it, I guess.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, we watched like two episodes and it was just kind of like, you know, just wasn't.
Okay. I really dig it. I recommend it. So you got a split decision on Nerd Appropriate. Difficult People, one thumb up, one thumb down.
I'm pretty sure our longtime listeners can probably make a decision just based on that, you know, the discussion of...
If you're one of the millions that laughs hysterically every week at the things I say, you should watch Difficult People. If you're one of the six people that agrees with Scott that puzzle platformers are the greatest thing ever created, then don't watch it.
There you
fine.
Go. Whimsical puzzle platformers. Thank you very much. Yeah.
If you fall asleep when Ash starts talking about Overwatch, just watch Difficult People.
I know. I can't stop. Can't stop, won't stop.
Can't stop, won't stop.
News.
Just some quick game announcements. There is a game that came out for Xbox, I think last year. It was an indie title called Lifeless Planet, and it tells the story of a person that arrives on a Mars-like planet, and, you know, shenanigans ensue, and you have to, like, figure out what's going on. It was really cool. It's not like a horror game. It's more like an adventure game, indie title, but it's on PlayStation 4 now, and the reason why I brought it up is that when I was reading through the news blast, it turns out that they donate some of the proceeds from the sale of the game to science education, which I think
is awesome.
Really cool. And it's actually a pretty solid game, and I played it before I knew that, and I recommended it, you know, back then when I played it on Xbox. And so if you're on PS4 and looking for an indie title, Lifeless Planet is fun. I saw recently, like maybe in the last day or two, a free game, completely free game, was released based on the movie Ben-Hur that I guess is coming to theaters very soon.
Yeah, sure is.
And, you know, like, let me just reiterate that the game is completely free. So if you need to make some assumptions about the potential quality of this game.
Well, I think the reason why people are playing it is it does have achievements attached to
that
it.
That is factually correct. There are achievements that you can get in the game.
Does it have Morgan Freeman in it?
I don't know, but from what I've heard, the game is not very good. Yeah. Is what my understanding is.
This is amazing to me because what must have happened is they must have had a big chunk of marketing money attached to making this game for the movie. They got it through CERT. And then they realized it was really bad. And they're like, we cannot charge people for this. And they're like, well, we already have this game. Let's just release it and don't charge anything and just use it as essentially, you know, I guess, advertising, free advertising.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. But, like I said, the game is potentially very bad, but there are achievements and you can earn them. And so that is a thing. You know, this has actually been done semi-successfully in the past where, to promote one of the Fast and Furious movies, they released a sort of like mini game based on Forza Horizon 2. And when the movie was out at the time, the game was free. And it was actually fantastic because it was just a subset of Forza Horizon 2, right? Which is a fantastic arcade racing game. So it's not like it's impossible to do something like that, but apparently this game just did not work. So let's move on. Let's talk really quickly since we're in August. Let's talk about the current games with gold for August, which
I'm gonna miss it if I don't get it this weekend.
You just go onto the website and just click buy on all the games.
Tell me what to do.
They'll be in your thing. But the games for August on Xbox One are Warriors Orochi 3 Ultimate, which is a game in the Dynasty Warriors series. So that's like
I'm there.
A dumb fun to play stuff like that. In the back half of the month, it's going to be WWE 2K16, WWE Wrestling. And then on the Xbox 360 side, you get Spelunky and a game that I really enjoyed, which is Beyond Good and Evil, the HD remake of that game. And nice. Of course, all of the 360 games are backwards compatible, so you can play them on Xbox One.
Beyond Good and Evil, the GameCube game that they upgraded for Xbox?
Yes. Yeah. So that was a sort of like a beloved kind of like cult. The game had a cult following because it was a sort of like an action third person sort of, it had puzzles in it, but they were more like, you know, block pushing puzzles.
Didn't it do the fourth wall breaking before anybody else did though? Like where they would rumble.
You might be thinking of Eternal Darkness.
The one where they would like black out the screen. And
that's
like
Eternal Darkness.
Tell you the game was off and stuff. Okay.
Yeah. That was like a more of like a horror style game. Hey, fun fact. The main character in Eternal Darkness, Jennifer Hale.
Oh, nice.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was looking through her thing one day, and I saw it on the list. I was like, holy shit, good on her. But yeah, Beyond Good and Evil was sort of like a cult classic action game.
Yeah.
Main character was Jade. She had a camera and fought like with a bow staff, I think, something like that. Mm-hmm. But that's really good, and so that's your games with gold. Currently, right now, for the next 4 days, you can still get last month's Xbox One title, which is Tumblestone, which we've talked about many times on the show, just a great puzzle game, couch co-op, and things like that too. So
yeah,
that is Games with Gold. the next bit of news actually came out today. Microsoft bought a company called Beam, which makes a live game streaming website with interactive components. And they, I guess their main selling point is that they claim a better sort of like latency over Twitch. So like a Twitch stream might have like a 5 to 10 second delay. And supposedly their delay is like, you know, less than 5 seconds.
Mm.
Yeah.
I can tell you something.
Do they have less users also?
Yeah, I was gonna say,
that might play into that.
People watching those streams do not give a rat's ass about the delay, and the people streaming don't care either because they're playing at the same. And if there's a 5 to 15 second delay, I don't know. I don't think it's a big deal. Not to shoot down this Microsoft buying Beam, it could be cool. Like,
it'd be like Cinemax being like, when our show goes up, it doesn't go down like when Game of Thrones goes up on HBO.
It's oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The scale there might be a little different.
Right.
I just, right. Maybe they kind of felt like they wanted more control over that part of the system, because yeah. Now they can integrate something directly into...
I mean, it makes total sense for Microsoft to buy it, right?
Of course.
Any service, you know, they'd love to have that kind of stuff on their system.
Yeah. Did Steam try to create its own streaming platform as well at a time?
I know Steam has integrated streaming now, so you can watch your friends stream if you're friends with them.
Maybe that's what it was.
I don't know if it's its own platform, but like, if I know a couple people that I was friends with were watching me just play Battleborn. I just got a notification in while I was playing that so-and-so wants to watch me play, and it just streamed it directly to them.
Cool.
So
that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, well, yeah. I mean, obviously that's a big business now, so you see the YouTube's doing their YouTube gaming. And so now there's Beam from Microsoft. Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. I'm sure they're just going to move all of their content over to that. So at least,
you know, it's interesting that you brought that up. Nerdist basically took a whole year off of Twitch and tried to do a lot of their streaming content on YouTube. And just recently this week, they went back to Twitch. And Nerdist is now doing like new content like several times per week, so they have live shows that they're doing on Twitch TV.
Were they trying to do like pre-recorded stuff or stream live on YouTube?
They were doing live streams on YouTube.
Oh, and that just wasn't not as popular, I guess.
I don't know. I mean, I just know that they now have a pretty robust schedule up on Twitch with some pretty cool shows. So they're doing some really kind of unique, fun live stuff on their Twitch channel again, which they had just kind of let sit, you know, for almost a year.
Yeah. So anyways, that's a thing.
Cool. No Man's Sky will be out by the time this is out. And the internet will have an opinion by the time this is out. Right now, it has been out on PS4 for, I think, 3 or 4 days. And it's coming out midnight tonight, so a couple hours from now on PC. And it's interesting, and the question I have up here is, can it meet expectations? I mean, it's interesting. I think people that have been playing it, there's already a very clear divide. Some people absolutely love this game, and some people, we had a couple of listeners that returned their copy half an hour after buying it because it did not meet the expectations that the developer had set for it. So I don't think
the developer set those expectations.
Sony?
Yeah, I think Sony did some marketing push there. I haven't heard the negative part of this divide. I've only heard the positive. Everybody that I've talked to that's played it so far loves it and is totally happy with what they got. I've asked them to walk me through it, sort of, and like tell me what their perspective is on the game and what they like about it, what they don't. And everybody, I think, kind of confirmed what we've said all along, which is that this game is going to probably blow the pants off of the people that it is built for.
Right.
And that it was probably pushed as maybe a broader scoped game or range game than it maybe is. And it really is like, if you want to explore hours on end and see worlds that no one else has seen and do all this kind of stuff, like that, it seems to be meeting that expectation.
Right.
But, you know, I think Scott and I and you doing it to a degree, Ash, as well, have all kind of said, well, I could see that being fun. And then I could also see me being like a week in and being like, OK, like I need something else because it's just not built for me specifically.
Right. You know, it's interesting. I'm kind of going back and forth on whether or not I want to pick this title up. But there have been a couple things in the past few days that I've seen that have made me kind of get a little bit more excited. The first thing is a guy was just hell-bent. And when you get to a new planet, you basically get a logbook and they tell you, okay, there are 10 species on this planet that you haven't discovered. Mm-hmm. And he basically spent like a long-ass time, I want to say like the whole day, hunting for the 10th creature that he hadn't found on this planet. And these are creatures that are uniquely – they're generated and they're unique on every single mm-hmm. planet. So right. there's like literally millions of different species. And so he's looking for this elusive creature that I guess is just very, very rare. And eventually he found it and he had this really long post about what the experience was like. Then I saw another post of this guy that was just, you know, on a planet cataloging creatures, and off in the distance was something that kind of looked like a koala with like big ears, and it slowly turned around and looked at his character like in a menacing sort of ring, wow. in a ring sort of way, like a slow head turn.
Okay.
And then looked at his character about a football field away and sprinted at him, and like little koala legs, sprinted at him, and then just like attacked and demolished his character.
Oh my God.
And I thought it was fucking just hilarious. And then yeah. there was another guy that was on this planet that was way, way out there. And apparently the planet was all sand, and there were like giant sandworms like Dune, like cruising through the sand. And I was like, okay, so it's not just like little like, you know, spuds and alligator creatures running around. There's like right. big things and like flying creatures and just really unique. That's, yeah. I was kind of afraid that the algorithm was going to be limited and you just get, you know, 25 variations of the same creature, which may be the case. But if you really are seeing kind of outlandish, bizarre creatures out there in the universe, that's kind of neat. I haven't heard much about the space combat. I know that does exist. I did watch a fun stream on PS4 of a gentleman that kind of pissed off the space cops, and he got chased by space cops and had to end up crash landing his ship on a planet to escape them, which I thought was neat. And then he had to get all these components together to get his ship back up and running, which I thought was really fascinating and cool. So I think it's one of those stories that if you're into sandbox, or one of those games rather, that if you're into the sandbox experience and you're into really, you know, kind of creating your own story, right? Because right. there is no big narrative from what yeah, I understand, right. then it might be the game for you. So I'm curious. I guess we'll
everybody that I know that has loved Fallout 4 and not for the narrative has loved this game so far. Like, has been like, this game is amazing. Like, it feels endless. It feels like I can just do all this stuff, and I love the worlds and the look and the feel. And like, I've heard literally, I don't follow it on Twitter super heavily. Like, I don't look at the Nerd Appropriate stream too often, so I've only looked at like my Twitter feed. I don't see too many negative things, but like, I just don't feel like any game can hold up to the hype and the kind of like deep looks that were happening on this one. You know, to the extent that they were happening, like
right
you can't have the level of hype and then come out completely unscathed. Some people are going to feel like they got sold a bill of goods that they don't like. Some people are going to feel like it's meeting and surpassing expectations. It's like, it's just impossible. This game was built by such a small team and was under so much of a microscope. I don't know how you come out of it that way.
That's the problem. You're absolutely right. I mean, the problem is that they were not the ones controlling their message, right? Hello right. Games with their 15-man team were not the ones controlling the message about absolutely. No Man's Sky. Because of that, they're going to be very rich guys. They're going to be super rich, 15 super rich guys. But also, because they're not controlling their message, there are a lot of, you know, there was a lot of miscommunication because Sony wanted it to be this massive blockbuster. And there's nothing wrong with that, you know, but, you know, they had to get the Game Informer cover. They had to get this. They had to get that. So, you know, there was a lot of things that kind of led to this hype machine happening.
Yeah. So what, I mean, Scott, you've been the one who hasn't talked yet. What are your feels?
Well, I mean, this is, I agree. I think that what, you know, all the negative stuff that's happened as a result of this game coming out is all because of the marketing and the messaging. And kind of what I feel like Sony did was they it's almost as if they introduced the game and they were like, shiny ball of light. And everybody's like, wow, shiny ball of light looks really fun. And they're like, okay, do you want to buy shiny ball of light? And it's like, well, it looks like it's a multiplayer game. And they're like, it's shiny ball of light. And it's like, that didn't answer my question. Is it a multiplayer game? And they're like, yeah. Look, here's another image of shiny ball of light. It's so shiny. You're going to want to play right. it. And it's like, okay,
that's all on purpose, right? They pretend that it's not, but having worked with marketing guys, they have a clouded message on purpose because they don't want people to react negatively to the real answer. Yeah. So they just don't answer.
So the problem there is that like it gets picked up by blog X, you know, like I'm honestly not even speaking particularly about any one of the blogs. And then that gets posted to Reddit, and then Reddit blows it up on Twitter, and then Twitter gets picked up by another blog, and then that other blog picks up the Reddit article, and like it like comes this message where all of a sudden, like today, literally tonight before I came to record, I was hanging out with a few work friends and we were talking about games and what everybody was playing. And somebody said something about No Man's Sky. And the guy next to me said, it came up about being multiplayer or not. And the guy next to me said, oh, well, the creator kept saying that it was multiplayer. And I didn't argue with him. I didn't go like, well, like, actually, I don't think he came out saying that. I think you're conflating things. But like, it's that message is like, that's why they play it kind of gray zone like that, because they know, oh, well, we'll let the internet run with it. And then we can at the end go like, well, we never said that. And yeah, they might lose a few sales. Things might go a little wrong in one side, but like most likely as long as the game's quality, it'll be fine. Yeah, you know, maybe, which they maybe knew early on that this game's going to be fucking killer. Let whoever buys it, maybe they'll fall in love with it regardless of it not being multiplayer, you know?
Yeah. So they let consumers make up their own headcanon about what the game is. And then the risk they took on was like, well, if, you know, 10% of those people decide that they like the game, even though it wasn't what they wanted, then that's 10% more than what we would have had before.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so anyways,
I think to me, this is a game, honestly, that like if in a few months I upgrade my graphics card on my computer or something and I'm like, oh, No Man's Sky is only $30 on Steam or whatever, like I'd probably pick it up at that point.
The price is an issue for me too.
It's price, because I know me in exploration games, and I don't get as much out of them as everybody else does. Mm-hmm. So like I won't $60 play this game, and I hate to do that to some games, you know, like put a money thing on it. I just know my time spent with it will be less than like even Ash's time would probably be way more than mine will be, you know.
Right.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. No, I agree.
So anyways, there you go. That's No Man's Sky.
Yeah, we'll see how people like it soon enough.
So next bit of news, apparently Disney is re-releasing the Force Awakens disc in a special 3D collector's edition, which is weird. It's a weird, weird choice, because I thought 4K was like the new hotness, and they're releasing a 3D Blu-ray package.
Right.
You know, with like some extra features and a bonus disc and some packaging and so on.
I don't feel like you can even buy a 3D TV
anymore. Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking too. It's really not that common just because the glasses are so expensive.
Yeah, I think they still do make TVs, but it's kind of like a throwaway feature at this point, you know, like checking the back of the box kind of thing. But like you said, you still need to get the glasses. You know, you remember when every TV had to have picture-in-picture? Remember when that was like, oh, every TV. It's like, oh, does this TV have two-tuner, picture-in-picture, man? Got to get those monster cables. You know, it was like a big...
Whoever actually used that, you know?
I did not. I mean, and I
did not either.
I actually
my dad did. To be fair, my dad would put on two different sports at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly for sports. Yeah, I used to sell TVs for a time, so I'm intimately familiar with this era.
Aren't like 80% of TV features for sports at the end of the day? Isn't that like how it works out?
I think
so.
I think that's the selling point. You know, it's like sports is like the porn of television. So as long as it's for sports, then it sells TVs, right? Yeah. So it was like, you remember it was like, oh, you had to have a Sony Trinitron because that had the best color,
Trinitron,
you know, the most lines of resolution. How many lines of resolution does this one have? It was like, so this is like the next thing. But anyways, they're releasing a Force Awakens collector's edition. If you've been holding out on physical, this might be the time, maybe. Interesting to bring this up because as we're recording this, we're kind of awaiting a new Rogue One trailer to drop in the middle of the Olympics on TV.
Yeah, what time does that happen?
They didn't say. They'll never say, right?
As long as you watch everything waiting.
Pick a time. Let's say 10 o'clock. That's going to be my guess.
I think so.
Yep.
I think we're going to see Vader. I think so.
Yeah. And then, oh, really? That's your prediction?
Yeah, I think we're going to see a little Vader tease.
Cool. I guess we'll find out while we're sitting here. But next bit of news, the Sony has a special event planned for September 7th where they're believed to unveil details about the PlayStation Neo. That's kind of all of the news.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
I'm excited to hear about the Neo. I don't know if I'll pick one up, but I think it's cool that they're doing these upgrades. I'm one of the few people that I think is in the corner of these upgrades happening, just because, you know, hardware gets old and might as well, you know, get some new stuff underneath the hood if you're going to upgrade your console anyway.
Yeah, my fear, right, is that, you know, we went through this cycle, this like half cycle where Xbox did a refresh where they made a unit which was, you know, approximately the same size as the current PlayStation. What if the Neo and Scorpio come out and they're, you know, again, the original size of the first Xbox One?
Right.
And then you have like the brick again.
Like they're just like, look, if you want this kind of machine, it's going to be this size.
That's what they're going to tell you. Yeah, that's kind of what I expect. So,
oh boy, that'd be
anyways,
bad.
That's that. So we'll wait to see. We're about a month away, so no details yet, but we'll see. I want to know if they're going to tell you how much it's going to cost.
There's a little quick bit of Gears of War 4 news that has me super excited. They released a new piece of gameplay footage. And first of all, looked gorgeous. Looks like they did, you know, major graphical update since the beta that they had. So it looks very, very nice. They showed off, you know, old Marcus Fenix in it. So you're going to get to play not as Marcus, but Marcus is in the campaign. So it shows the new character, Marcus's son, JD, kind of playing next to his dad. So they're fighting off new enemies. And the thing, these new enemies actually have the internet sort of in a tizzy if you're a Gears of War fan. Because they are robots, and I thought it was fucking awesome.
Interesting.
So they're fighting like waves of basically Terminators that get dropped out of the sky from these crazy, like, look like B-17s that are raining down these like metal balls, and the balls hit the ground and like unravel to be like Terminators. And so if you can imagine the Gears of War franchise like kind of crossing over with a Terminator, that's what you're going to be getting. And they're all different types. There were like these giant ones that kind of explode when they come close to you. And there were troopers that like are just huge and metallic and have these big guns. And it just looked really, really cool.
I'm excited for this game.
Yeah, I am too. And they're called the DBs, which I don't understand why. That's the name of the faction. And I looked all over and like everyone's, yeah, they're called the DBs. So the DBs are the new Gears of War faction. And they also revealed that Horde mode is definitely back for Gears of War 4, which is probably one of the most popular modes.
That's great.
And then it's going to be playable on all 20, I think 21 or 22 maps that ship with the game. So you're going to have 20 different maps to play Horde on this time, which is just going to be incredible. So
crazy.
New factions, you know, all sorts of new stuff. Oh, and also the thing about Horde mode is it's going to be class-based now.
Nice.
Which is something that they touched on with Judgment. They did a class-based multiplayer. But I'm really interested to see what these classes are. They haven't revealed really anything about it, just that the different characters that you can unlock are going to be different classes that fulfill different roles, and you'll be able to like lay down traps and turrets and all that sort of stuff that you did before in Gears of War 3. So,
crazy.
Yeah, Gears 4 is going to be fun just for multiplayer.
Big game.
So that's
kinda, yeah.
I would guess that DB is short for something, and then we find out when the game comes out what that is, and they just
I think so
call,
too.
Them, call them DBs.
Dude,
so.
Bros.
Yeah,
dude bros.
Dude bros. Yeah, perfect.
Let's talk about SNL.
Last bit of news. Surprising cast changes at SNL. Jay Farrow, who you know from his many, many impressions. Taron Killam, who I personally think is the funniest dude on SNL right now.
Agreed.
And John Rudnitsky, who you may not know. He was one of the lesser-known guys from last year. Are all exiting SNL. They have been removed from the show, like they're not quitting.
Yeah.
their contracts were not renewed to come back.
That's interesting.
So Jay Farrow, Taron Killam, and John Rudnitsky all out. And then news came out today that Jay Farrow and Taron Killam both have new shows lined up on, weirdly enough, on Showtime. The news came out today.
Oh, okay.
So they apparently already had these shows lined up, and they were just going to work around their SNL schedule, but now they don't have to, I guess. So.
Yeah, Lorne Michaels doesn't fuck around. Like
he likes to shake it up. Yeah, he'll remove people
just really like quickly. Like you know, yeah. And he doesn't really care.
Like John Rudnitsky, I could see he wasn't in a ton of things last year. He was sort of like shorter.
I feel like he played like the straight person in a lot of the sketches.
Yeah, he was in that the French dancing one too. Like I think he was in that as well. And he was kind of like he'd be in there kind of off as a side character a lot. Jay Farrow was used a ton, and it was one of their few like main impression guys, which is surprising. And then Taron Killam, I feel like, is probably their biggest name right now. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's, it's surprising. I guess, you know, that Leslie Jones has kind of exploded, and Kate McKinnon is huge. I really hope that they use Vanessa Bayer more, because I think she's one of the funniest people on the show.
Yeah, she is really good. Yeah,
she barely gets used, so we will see.
We will see.
Brian and I say that she's being Nassim Pedrotted, which is meaning that she's one of the funniest people there, but they just kind of like don't put her on air a lot. So
that's too bad.
Yeah. That was interesting. I don't know. I always love. They haven't announced any new cast members, so we'll wait and see what happens. But
well, the good thing is that those talented people tend to land in other places. You know, like even a smaller character like Noelle Wells, who was only on the show for one season and didn't do a lot, ended up on Master of None, which was
fantastic. Yeah,
she's excellent.
And then you got like, you know, Sudeikis is like the biggest star in the world right now, and like I think it's pretty cool that some of them
good make movie it career out and everything. Stuff. Yeah. So we'll see.
We will.
Let's take a quick break and we'll move on to reviews.
Yes.
Hey, this is Sissy Jones from Firewatch, and you're listening to the Rated NA Podcast.
And we're back with some reviews. The first thing I would like to talk about is a game called Layers of Fear, which is a psychedelic...
Layers?
Like, yes.
Like the dark lair.
Yes. No, like onions have layers, you know?
Oh, like, okay.
Onions, like rule different realms?
Yeah. Oh geez, we're really really moving off the path here.
Oh, layers.
Okay. Oh, layers,
like I'm gonna get layered.
No
like Photoshop layers.
Yes, like Photoshop layers. I think that's close.
All right, moving on. Next review
Suicide Squad. So Layers of Fear is described as a psychedelic horror game. It's like a first person again, when I use this phrase, I never use it in a negative way, like a walking simulator.
Okay
But it tells the story of an insane painter who is trying to finish his like magnum opus, if you will, right?
Okay.
And you know, it's got all of the trappings of a great psychological horror game, which is, you know, a creepy mansion in darkness. And it's hard to talk about a game like this, similar to the way, you know, that it's hard to talk about a game like Inside, because to tell you what happens in the game sort of spoils the experience for people that haven't played it. But right. What I will say is that if you like the types of games where you like to be scared and, you know, frightened, and games that kind of like mess with you and make you think, like, you should just stop listening and go play the game. What makes the game good as far as being, you know, a psychological horror game is that the execution of the game is like nearly flawless. And it's not to say that it's, you know, the best horror game in the world, but the things that they set out to do, they were successful in doing them, you know what I mean?
Right.
Okay. So there's like really great visuals, the music is good, the atmospheric sounds are like, you know, everything works to give you sort of like that feeling, the scary feeling, the goosebumps, like being frightened, right. Like being careful where you move in this environment, you know?
Uh-huh.
And it just, like, you know, like a great horror game should, it just slowly like spirals down into this really crazy dark place, and just tells like a really great story. And you know, like I said, I don't want to say too much about it, but I'm going to tell you guys one thing about the game. And okay. It's not a spoiler, because you don't know when it's going to happen. And just by me telling you, you're going to be looking for it, and you're just not going to know when it's going to happen. So there is a point in the game where you are moving around in this mansion, and like out of nowhere, a creepy like baby doll thing runs right in front of you, hits the wall, does like a Ringu twitch, and then makes like an awful, like deep voiced, like very awful sound, and then disappears. and then you're like back on your own. You're like, oh, okay, well, like that scared the shit out of me. And I've probably played through the game you know, a couple of times already just to kind of get a feel for it. And yeah. The first time I played with the lights off and the headphones, and I was like, okay, no more of that, right? Because this game scares the shit out of me. And nice. Even this is like maybe like a good testament of how good the game is, right? Is that if I play with the lights on and the TV on, I still get goosebumps when I see things happening in the game that I know are going to happen.
Wow. Wow, yeah. That's awesome.
So it's cool, yeah. So anyways, the Layers of Fear came out.
So definitely pick it up.
Yeah,
is what I'm hearing.
So if you're looking for a great survival horror game, you know, turn the lights off, put your headphones on. Layers of Fear, it's on Xbox One. Comes with some extra DLC that you can get that extends the story, and it's part of the sort of summer game series, and I highly recommend you check it out.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I was going to ask if it was Xbox One or not, so I'll have to look into it. Layers of Fear.
Layers of Fear. Like Dragon's Lair, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Layers of Fear.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, not like Dragon's Lair. What are you doing here, Ash? The wrong lair. All right. Tell us about the squad.
Oh, man. This is one of those things where you're just like... Well, first of all, this is the first movie I've gone to in the theater since the birth of my child. So it's been three long months.
How did baby Ash like... Suicide Squad. What did he rate it?
How did which what?
Did you bring your son?
No, hell no.
What the hell, man?
You don't bring an infant to the movie.
way to go. He could have gone and seen this movie in the theaters, and
he probably could have gone for free too.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Oh my god.
Seat.
I could have smuggled in snacks in his diaper. Put some fucking goobers in there.
He would have smuggled in some snacks for you in his diaper.
Yeah. For sure. But anyway, so I went and saw Suicide Squad. I was very excited for a long time to see this just because, you know, I wanted to love it. You know, it had, I think, one of the best trailers I had seen in a very long time. The trailer,
yeah, they sure did cut a trailer for that thing, didn't they?
They really did. It was awesome. It was, you know, cut to Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody, and it just got you really, really pumped. I'll preface this sort of review. I'll preface the review by saying I didn't hate it as much as many people did on the internet. There were some good performances. Margot Robbie was really, really good.
Yeah.
Her Harley was, I think, spot on, and I really hope that they use her for future DC Universe movies. Mm-hmm. I can't see. Well, I don't know what her contract entails, but I hope that she's in you know future films because I think her character probably. I think had the most screen time, and you know, oddly enough, I think she or Will Smith had the most depth in terms of just the you got to know them a little bit more than the rest of the characters. So
right.
Harley was great. She did a lot of her own stunts and stuff too, which was neat to see. And you know, I don't really have any complaints about her. There are some arguments going online about her relationship with Joker, about you know how volatile their relationship is and how it may have been portrayed incorrectly on screen and sort of showed her clinging to this, you know, really abusive diabolical character. But right. That to me has always been what Harley's relationship with Joker has been like ever since she was introduced in the animated series in the 90s. He has been horrible and abusive towards her. And only in recent years in the comics has she kind of broken free of that and become her own person. So I think her breaking free of the Joker's
Suicide Squad too, right? Is when they really kind of.
So yeah, I mean, and I only kind of skim Suicide Squad stuff and Harley stuff, but from what I've been reading about over the past several years, she's you know now that she has her own ongoing series and is very popular, they've definitely separated her from the Joker and have you know really made her own person, which I think is something that we will see in the DC Universe movies in the future. But
right.
The other standout was definitely Will Smith as Deadshot. He was awesome. He was just, you know, he was more Will Smith than anything else, you know? Like you can kind of say you can kind of take any of his characters and be like, "Oh, it's Will Smith in a movie." So he was kind of Will Smith in the Suicide Squad.
Right.
But it was welcome though, because you know he has that kind of, you know, he was darker, a little bit more somber, but he still has that likability and that charm that he brings to all of his roles. So he was a really cool Deadshot. Obviously, you know, his ability is that he can't really miss a shot.
Right.
And they really show that off in the film. So he does some really incredible stuff with the guns. The rest of the Suicide Squad is really like as two-dimensional as can be. And I don't want to I'm not going to make it spoilerful, but I will say that the rest of the team has little to no dialogue and little to no, I mean, they have screen time, but they don't really have arcs. So they just kind of do these little vignettes at the beginning of the film that show you like why everyone's there, what they did to get there. And it kind of plays like a little bit like a Guy Ritchie film. Like they do like a really, you know, heavy on the graphics. They say, here's this person's file. Here's why they're here. Here's their abilities. And they just do that for the first like half an hour. That's the first half hour of the movie, is just like setting up who the Suicide Squad is. And, you know, and the thing that's weird is the first, I want to say 45 minutes of the movie, you can take all the sequences and just kind of shuffle them around and it would be the same movie. Like there's no, no real structure to it. Like people will argue with me, but I honestly think if you just moved all the edits in the first, you know, all the sequences rather in the first 45 minutes into a completely different order, you would still have the same movie, which is kind of weird, right? Like you want there to be an arc, you want there to be, you know, something you really care about. So they do a lot of character introductions. They kind of get, you know, hopefully you learn a little bit about why they're bringing this team of supervillains together. And then they go on this mission, and the mission's pretty cool. I don't want to reveal too much. But it's also very, very messy once they go on the mission. Like there's not, again, there's no real arc in the movie. So they just kind of go and they fight a bunch of shit and then the movie ends and you're like, wait, what? Like these guys had no time to get to know each other. They don't really grow as characters. Nothing really happens.
Right.
So was it like a music video?
It really was. And that's, I don't know if you guys have heard about that, but they have, I want to say 6 or 7 or 8 almost full songs that drown out the rest of the dialogue in the film. So you're talking about 6 or 7 or 8, and they're all like classic rock songs. There's like, you know, AC/DC in there and Queen in there. And they have like, not a classic rock song, but they have like Eminem in there. Like, I think the real Slim Shady is played at some point, or I don't know. It's really strange. And another reviewer said something that I just thought was hilarious. And they're like, it was like if someone gave the Juggalos $100 million to make a superhero movie.
It was what everybody's been saying, which is like if Hot Topic made a movie, this is the movie.
And that's a little dismissive, right? And that's snarky and shitty, and I hate to be that way, but there's just so much that was kind of unforgivable. Like the arc of the film should still be a film. There should be a beginning, a middle, and an end, and cool things should happen and characters should grow. And that did not happen. So
like the problem that I feel like, cause I feel like we tend to prop up Marvel movies and diss on DC movies more often than not. But to be fair, we also love DC's television shows. So it's not the brand. It's not like a weird brand thing, but I noticed this during Batman vs. Superman, which you still have. Did you not see that yet?
Or you haven't seen it? Because right now I have to spend $20 to watch it.
Yeah.
So I have not seen it.
Well, unless you know your good buddy, Matt. But, but it's one of those things where I feel like they are too preoccupied as a movie studio with setting up long running universes than they are with making a enjoyable movie. Right. Like, everything they do is like some weird, like, let's introduce all these characters and then let's see if, you know, like we can, like, whichever one takes off, we'll be ready to run 3 new movies on and do this with like a new group over here and a new super group over here. And it's like, all of it feels like it's just going that way. And it's like, it's sort of like, you know, playing catch up with Marvel, I'm sure. And I'm sure there's pressure from Warner Brothers and stuff to do that. But at the same time, like, Marvel has this universe because they made Iron Man, which was an incredibly enjoyable movie. Right. Like they took a B-level character and made a super fun movie out of it. And then we're like, oh, and then made another one and then made another one. And then they were like, oh, we're going to lay out this world for the Avengers and we're going to do this. And like now I think we're starting to see fallout from that, where some of those movies become too cluttered and they don't do that well. And it's like hard to control. But like every time they focus on a character and just make an enjoyable movie and stop worrying about setting up the next 7 movies, it tends to be really great. And like DC, like from Man of Steel through Batman vs. Superman through Suicide Squad, it just feels like they're constantly trying to be like, what if we set up a new universe here? You know, and you're like, guys, just like make a fun movie for once. Yeah. Make it smaller. Make it a little bit just about these three things or this one person or whatever it is.
Right. No, I totally agree. I totally agree. And you can definitely tell that there are Easter eggs in this movie that lead you to believe that they are trying to set up a future down the road where it's going to be JLA versus Suicide Squad. Like that, that's something that's going to happen. It's going to be their big Infinity War in the DC universe.
Right.
But they haven't, you know, they haven't earned it like Marvel has. Marvel is like, what, 7 or 8 films in at this point? And
more than that, aren't they? Aren't they like 10 or
maybe 10? Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable. So, you know, I think that's something that takes time, and I don't know. There were parts of Suicide Squad I really liked. Like, I think the casting was great. I didn't mind Jared Leto as Joker.
Right.
You've probably heard that a lot of his screen time was cut. That was a big thing that kind of floated around the internet. For one reason or another, there was a lot of Jared Leto stuff that was removed. Probably because the movie was already long and having like all these extra Joker scenes that didn't really tie in with the very loose narrative that they had. Would be a little strange. Like, there's Joker stuff that obviously is a huge part of Harley's origin, which is really cool to check out. And he does look menacing, and he looks completely insane, like,
right,
and really mirrors Frank Miller's Joker in the Frank Miller comics. So I think he did a pretty good job, and I really do look forward to seeing him face off against Batman eventually.
Ben Affleck,
yeah. And I don't know, man. I wouldn't say that I don't recommend this. I would say, you know, if you can see it for cheap, go see it. It's like I said, I got a big tub of popcorn. I got a cherry Coke. I sat down for 2 hours and watched a fucking dirt rock music video with superheroes like beating up monsters. And I was okay with that. Like, I didn't have that really cool, like, Guardians of the Galaxy catharsis where the hair stands up in your arms, right, and you're like, I'm seeing glory. That didn't happen with Suicide Squad, but it was still like, you know, it was okay. So,
right. So you'd give it a Thor out of the Marvel movie rating.
Yeah.
System.
Yeah. I'd give it a Thor or like a Iron Man 2.
Right. Oh, Iron Man 2 is disappointing.
Boy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, much like Suicide Squad, I also went and saw an ensemble movie called Don't Think Twice.
Yes.
It's also full of comic book here. No.
It's a great
Do
transition.
You guys know what this movie is or no?
I know what it is.
I know what it is. It's the Birbiglia movie, right?
Yeah. So Mike Birbiglia, comedian that we've talked about actually on this show recently, because Ash has been rewatching comedy on Netflix. He's sort of a storytelling comedian, and a little while ago, he's, from what I've heard on other interviews, had like a moment with his wife where his wife mentioned something about how it's weird that in this improv show that he was doing in New York, there was like, you know, Adie Bryant and, you know, Vanessa Bayer and him, and then there's like a guy who's still sleeping on a mattress in Queens. Like, it's like it's a weird spread of people who have made it and not made it.
Yeah.
So he set out to create this movie kind of about improv and about comedy and about what happens when opportunity is provided to one or two people out of an ensemble of like five, and what happens to the group dynamic, what happens to these people when one person finds success on a level of an SNL like show when everybody else is still kind of like doing their $5 improv shows in New York weekly. Melissa and I went and saw this. I will say that both of us cried in the theater multiple times during this movie.
Yes, I heard that too.
It
wow.
is a brutal, emotional movie that hits on a level that is just like it's heart-wrenching and like uplifting all at the same time. He wrote all credit to Mike Birbiglia, who wrote just an absolutely beautiful script about just people and like what happens in a family sort of group dynamic. It really was like written so well and acted amazingly. Gillian Jacobs from Community fame, Mike Birbiglia, Chris Gethard, Keegan-Michael Key. There's two more people and I'm blanking on their names. They're both improv legends in New York too. Shit. It's their group called the Commune, and they're sort of like a UCB like stage show where they do improv every week. People are coming out, and the beginning of the movie opens with the theater that they're doing it at is going to close. But before the theater closes, one of their old teammates who went on to this SNL-like show called Weekend Live comes and brings a casting agent from the show. And then Keegan-Michael Key's, this is all literally within the first 15 minutes of the movie, Keegan-Michael Key's character and Gillian Jacobs get to try out, and Keegan-Michael Key makes it into the cast. And so like he kind of half quits the group, and then stuff gets really weird, and it's just kind of, it just follows that group from there. I will say this, I did not connect to this movie. I mean, I did somewhat from an improv like comedy level because I've been doing that stuff, but this was kind of showcasing people that are well above anything that I'm doing in improv. What I did connect heavily on was being in a band and managing five people at the same time and what happens when, well, it's really like, honestly, truthfully, about what happens when all of a sudden the ultimate goal of each one of those people isn't the same. Right. So yeah. like whether one of us made it or not had nothing really to do with it. It's just like, well, what happens when one person wants to go, you know, literally join the Secret Service, and the other wants to get a PhD, and then the other one's not sure where he wants to live. And like when, what happens when that all splinters, and like, how do you manage it? And how do you handle it? And like, it just was done such like, it was so real feeling and so human. And like, it was honestly, guys, like feasibly one of the best movies I've seen in a long time.
He's a wonderful storyteller.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's really good. Yeah.
Yeah. If you like anything you've ever heard from Mike Birbiglia, I can't recommend this movie enough. It's just gorgeous. It's wonderful. We saw it in a really awesome small theater here, but from what I understand, the opening weekend did well enough that he's starting to get a national release now, because he only opened in like 10 cities. So I think he added like 20 more this week, and hopefully he'll add 20 more next week. And it's just one of those, like, if this thing doesn't come around for Oscars, I'll be disappointed. It's that good. It's very, very, very good.
Oh, that's awesome.
So yeah, I don't know. It's called Don't Think Twice. It's about improv comedy, but don't let that fool you. It's really about kind of relationships and creative endeavors and really chasing something and what that means to these different people. And it also kind of hits on, and I won't tangent, I promise, but because I know we're out of time. But Scott and I think we've even referenced this on the podcast before. Scott and I had this talk a long time ago that I will forever remember. We were on tour. We were in New York. We were sitting at a bar that's closed now, that's very close to my house. And we were talking about settling and what settling meant.
Oh, yeah.
And I had this very hard-nosed opinion that settling meant you were giving up on a thing you actually wanted and just dealing with whatever you got. Mm-hmm. And Scott was like, no, settling means that you've hit a place where you feel comfortable and you're happy, and you finally made a thing like out of what you wanted. And we went back and forth a long time about this. I don't think we even ever really agreed. It wasn't even a fight. It was just one of those, like, we were each having a beer and having a long talk about life kind of thing.
We spend a lot of time together on tour.
Yeah, you do.
Spend a lot of time.
And this movie, I think, nails that. Like, every one of those five people has a different version of what success is and what, like, a life goal is to them. So when one person wants to make it in Weekend Live, you know, another might not, and it might be totally fine. That other person might be super happy doing something smaller and more personal to them, you know, like, and it's kind of about that. So awesome. Go see it, please go see it. Cause I think this movie deserves like a ton of viewership, but it's called Don't Think Twice. I think it's in small release. I wouldn't be surprised if it was like at Enzian in Orlando, and you know, it's up here at Nighthawk and probably Alamo in Texas. And if you've got like an art house theater, it's almost definitely at that. But, you know, seek it out, look it up, write your theater, tell them you want to see it, because it's a small movie that I think deserves a big audience. So cool. Don't think twice. Yeah, it's good.
That is awesome.
And maybe think twice about seeing Suicide Squad.
Yeah. Take your $12 and go spend it on like a guy who made a movie out of, you know, very small budget, but it's actually, he said, the biggest budget he's ever had, and it's still clearly not a huge budget, but
wow.
But it's great. Go see it.
Cool. We did it. We're done. That was fun, guys. Thank you guys so much for listening to episode 241 of the Rated NA podcast. As always, you guys can find us on Twitter, and that's at NerdAppropriate. You can email us directly, and that's Scott, Matt, or Ash at NerdAppropriate.com. We have a Facebook page, which is /NerdAppropriate. We have a YouTube page, which is going to have all of our new Comic-Con stuff on it pretty soon. So head on over to YouTube, slash inappropriate. And one of these days when my child decides that he wants to sleep for extended periods of time, I'll get back on Twitch.tv/inappropriate and play some games, because we do have a Twitch channel. Please follow us there. And we'll be back soon with all new stuff. And definitely check out your feeds for all that fun stuff that Scott cut together from us from San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah.
See ya. Later, guys.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Played a wrestling game since like your bedroom. And
yes,
that sounded weird.
Yeah, that sounded super weird. What you meant to say was we haven't played a wrestling game since we played Royal Rumble on the Super Nintendo when we were very young. Is what you
Man,
meant
I haven't
to say?
Played a wrestling game since we used to play that wrestling game in your bedroom.
There you go. That's the right way.